You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
And like, I gotta be real with you. Like, what's up with the vibrato all the time? Like, can't you just relax? It's like the metal bands that use double bass all the time. Relax. Just relax. Chill out. You don't have to sing like that.
Mind blow about to happen. Vibrato is relaxation. It is your muscles periodically relaxing in your neck. That's when you've got strong, very nicely balanced muscles and phonation, all the good stuff.
When Ben sings, he has the opposite. He has veins popping out of every orifice on his body.
Oh, yeah, no, I have to do it until I blow out my vocal folds. And then I can't speak for 3 days. And Corey's psyched because he's just like, good, good.
It's very relaxing for those 3 days. Hello and welcome to another episode of 2020. My name is Corey Peza. I'm here as always with Siobhan Cronin and Benny Goodman. How goes it?
Hey guys, I'm excited for this one. This was so fun.
It's a good one.
This is an example of knowing that we've got to the next level with the show. So if you haven't subscribed yet, 2020-D.com, because this came up in my Google feed. The charismatic voice came up in my feed and I just went and saw it and I became so enamored with what the charismatic voice or Elizabeth Zharoff does.
Yeah, I think you sent me like all her links at like 4 a.m. Just like, you got to watch classic every Ben one style. Of these.
No, but they're amazing. And I mean, speaking of learning how to talk, wow, she has like the most soothing voice. Even when she was talking, I was like, wow, I need to tone it down. It's just like, she's so calm when she's talking and it's so nice to listen to her.
She reminds me of the girls on Saturday Night Live that like pretend to be that calm, but she actually is that calm. And when she said that she moved to like become the voice of an artificial intelligence, I'm like, yeah, you'd be the Terminator that kills me. Yeah, I believe that.
And it would be very relaxing as it murdered you.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, everything's going to be fine. But don't listen, worry. It's going black now.
This episode, we get to kind of get a little bit of her background, which we always like to do. But also, it's just a much different career trajectory than we're used to, you know, people we're talking with. This isn't, you know, a rock and roll story. This is a whole new
success
path.
Success comes in all shapes and sizes, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone like, in between. All shapes and sizes. So don't judge. She's so successful in her own way because of her passion. And that's the subtext.
Yeah. No, it was very cool to talk to someone that's a true, like, social media influencer, somebody that has a huge following. So definitely tune in.
But that sounds negative because she's so much better than that.
Of course. No, I mean, it's so hard to put her in a category.
So
here we go. Part one with Elizabeth Zharoff of The Charismatic Voice.
Hi, my name is Benny Goodman, and welcome to 2020, a show that you can subscribe to on the internet at 2020-D.com. Give it a like, a share. Just be nice and kind to each other. That said, I'd like to talk to my friends here, Corey Peza and Siobhan Cronin. How are you guys doing?
Hey, good, Ben. I'm excited for this today.
Doing really well. This is definitely a unique show. I'm pumped to actually learn something instead of talking to all these like weird rock stars and stuff.
And you're probably wondering why my candor is so temperate. And it's because our guest this week relaxes me from the second she speaks. From the second she speaks, I stop what I'm doing.
She's also a true professional.
That's so nice. That's so nice. And her name is Elizabeth. I did say your first name. Elizabeth Zharoff. She is the charismatic voice. And I say that because if you don't know who she is, you may have seen her if you go on YouTube and type in charismatic voice, because she has millions and millions of views because she talks about music from the perspective of a classical opera singer and coach. And the only way I can describe it, you're like the Bob Ross of talking about heavy metal and other music, but specifically heavy metal, because I've never heard somebody so whimsical and relaxed. Just like, you know, I really loved when Bruce Dickinson just opened up his vocal folds. It was fantastic the way he hit the gallows pole. And I've never heard it. So ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the charismatic voice, Elizabeth Zharoff.
Woo! Hi, guys.
Pretty epic introduction.
That was such an awesome introduction. Thank you so much, Benny. Yeah. And thank you for pronouncing my name beautifully correctly. Wow. Wow, you got the French "j" right on.
Yeah, it's all, this is something it's all downhill I understand. From here, so.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah, my name is often butchered, so was that a I've gotten so used to it.
A zing! Yeah, totally. Boom.
I love that she got it. She was fast. She's fast, guys. Maybe we need to hire her.
Oh, she's a pro. But yeah.
So, Elizabeth, as the other classical musician in the room, I want to ask, how did you go from, you know, going to school to be a singer to getting into the space of the influencer space, making videos? Because I feel like, from my perspective, classical music education, like, in, you know, being in kind of the same generation, it was like a far distant world. I feel like my education was like so in the box, you know, you get out, you want to get an orchestra job. And the idea of like turning to the internet to build a career was just not even really discussed.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It was not a thing when I got my degree. It wasn't. I definitely think classical music, like it set me down a great path to go sing in opera houses. And that was able to provide me with like tons of experience. That was super cool. But I think that it just comes from a background of always being hungry to learn and loving new technology at the same time. So essentially, you know, I was already a gamer way back in middle school, high school. I was, you know, playing the StarCraft. It was very fun. Protoss, in case you're wondering. And I loved technology. And so while I was getting the degrees, I was also, you know, doing things like composing at the same time. But then I got very focused and went, bam, into opera, started doing the singing internationally thing. And then while I was singing internationally, I was playing a video game. It was called Braid. If you've ever played it, it's like an indie video game that plays with the mechanisms of time. Really, really cool. And there was a song in it, and I heard it, and I was like, oh my gosh, I composed something like that on the piano the other day. What if I could write music for video games? And so I started looking into it, and I did some extra schooling through Berklee Online to get some music technology under my belt. You know, at conservatories at the time, they weren't teaching things like DAWs or...
Absolutely. You know, I'm taking classes through Berklee Online right now, so that's very cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I love what they do.
You guys can just send me a check and I'll just send you like a window of a Apple screen with the pinwheel of death doing nothing. And that's your education. Just look at that.
Pro Tools 101.
For 10 hours. And then realize that your song is destroyed and have to start all over. You're welcome.
That hurts. That's what happens. That happens in Sibelius too, though. If you're like notating music the classical fashion, it happens there too. I know. It happened 3 times on the same song for me once.
Oh boy. So anyway, sorry, we didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no worries.
Oh yeah, she
no
doesn't understand that I take people down a digression and that she has to return back to her train of thought after I've completely derailed her.
Yeah, part of this is a memory game, remembering where you left off before he curb stomps the conversation.
Yeah, it's like seventh guest. You kind of have to figure it out. You know what I mean? Like you have to like the puzzle. Yeah. Wasn't that an awesome game?
Thank you. It was such a good game. It had good sound too. And
it was five CDs,
the...
so you knew it was badass. Yeah. Like Phantasmagoria had 8 CDs, so you're like, that's huge. Like what the hell requires 8 CDs? But the seventh guest had the graphics on it were like out of this world.
They were so good. And then you go back to it and you're like, well, that was good.
Yeah.
No, it was good. So, video games, that was sort of my re-entry into music technology, which is strange for a lot of people, but I love it. And I learned more about video games and the software behind them. And I started reading more about things like middleware, which is this, I feel like it's just one of the things that's transforming how music
is that
being
near
made
Middle
today.
Earth?
No.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's the things that they wear. So you're going to find lots of mithril armor.
Like LARP. Like LARPing, right?
Yeah,
LARPing?
Exactly. Kay. Where? Yes.
Let's go.
It's actually some software that essentially like it goes between, it like works with the game engine so that it can produce sounds on the fly or can create essentially adaptive music. So instead of having
it's in between the engines, so it's like the clutch.
Oh, Ben, why don't you just let her finish talking? She's going to get there.
I'm just trying to understand. She's talking like
so are
these
the listeners, but they're not
like
getting
out there concepts. And I'm just my small mind. I'm a guitarist. Like, I'm sorry, Elizabeth.
Oh, no.
I'm a guitarist. I'm only able to to palpable so much at once.
Okay, I'll try to guitarify it a little bit.
Thank you for the dumb people on this call.
Like video game music before was loops. right? Like you play your four chords and you go back and play those four chords again. Guitar. It was all based on looping music. That was often maybe a minute and a half or something. It wasn't very complicated. And way back when, you only had so many sounds you could use. But then technology evolved a bunch. It was really cool because you got this software that kind of sits in between. And the game engine is creating the graphics and generating whatever's happening in the game. But this middleware, it's stuff like FMOD or WISE. Looks like WISE, but it's just pronounced WISE. These middleware, they essentially can help compose or change the music while you're going around in the game so that every time you play it, you have a different sort of score that's happening. And they do that by taking music and not only making it linear, so it has maybe a time mechanism, but they'll stack it and make it more vertical. So they might do things like fade in the drums when you're getting really close to a big boss. Or maybe they have the violin when there's a fairy nearby or something like that.
Wow.
So it started changing how people would compose music, especially when you look at transition points, like where harmonically, where can I shift from this point to maybe another vertical composition at a different land in the game?
You're literally saying that like interactive music that changes based on what's happening with the architecture of what's going on in the game, and the music changes in real time based on what you're doing.
Yeah,
that's like, isn't that Terminator?
So cool.
Isn't that the movie Terminator?
like
don't
AI.
They become intelligent and run us and kill us all, and James Cameron makes a ton of money?
Yeah, and that's actually the next way that this path took. I ended up kind of traveling all around, but also composing for video games and then doing a little bit of work for things like VR at the same time, looking at how I could involve more voice into it as well. Did a little bit of VO in there. And then while I was at LA Opera, AI came knocking on the door. I had met someone in Silicon Valley that was running a company that wanted to make an AI voice for cars, self-driving cars in particular. So think like Siri or Alexa, but in a car that you're riding in that doesn't have a driver. And they approached me and said, hey, would you be the voice on this project? And then we used my opera skills and I got to teach the computer how to understand us through things like IPA, which is not a beer, but is the International Phonetic Alphabet. Well, it's also a beer.
Yes.
But it was really cool because we got to teach a computer using my weird opera skills of
languages.
You're
teaching the Terminator how to kill us?
Yes, enabling
I mean,
them.
To kill us best, it has to understand us first. So, yes.
At what point in your career is this?
So, I think this is around 2016 to 18, I think, is when I was at LAO. And around 2018 is when I actually left LA Opera to pursue that full time with the company Speak With Me. But I had already started at that point a YouTube channel, and that's kind of where we see this big shift, because I felt like opera in the classical domain, I love reaching people with opera. Okay, don't get me wrong. Like, it gives you goosebumps. It just shakes your bones. It's amazing. But I felt like it was a little bit confining. I just wanted to reach more people. It's a very limited audience in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, you know exactly what I mean. It's very niche. So I
can barely listen to a song that's 7 minutes long, nevertheless 49 minutes long. And like, I got to be real with you. Like, what's up with the vibrato all the time? Like, can't you just relax? It's like the metal bands that use double bass all the time. Relax. Just relax. Chill out. You don't have to sing like that.
Mind blow about to happen. Vibrato is relaxation. It is your muscles periodically relaxing in your neck. That's when you've got strong, very nicely balanced muscles and phonation, all the good stuff.
When Ben sings, he has the opposite. He has veins popping out of every orifice on his body.
Oh, yeah, no, I have to do it until I blow out my vocal folds. And then I can't speak for 3 days. And Corey's psyched because he's just like, good, good.
Mm-hmm. It's very relaxing for those 3 days.
There you go.
Until you have to edit my vocals.
Yes.
And then I live forever.
So that is quite recently, just a few years ago. And
yeah.
So what was the motivation to start the YouTube channel in the first place?
Well, motivation for the YouTube channel is really something that was about vocal education. So if you look on there, it was especially because as I had gotten to know a lot of video game composers, they were asking me about how to write for vocalists better. So I started down that route. Started talking about different kinds of voice categories or different vocal exercises. And yeah, ultimately it was a goal to serve what I saw as like a gap in knowledge. And then it was actually at a Game Sound convention, Game Sound Con in LA, when I was still at LA Opera, and I met a guy named Sean Daniel. He's a YouTuber, guitar channel. He's hilarious. He is like, he is charismatic, the staple of. And he was at this Game Sound convention, and Marty O'Donnell was somebody I'd walked up to at a Game Sound convention a few years before. He wrote the soundtrack for Halo. If you know, like the monk chant, that was Marty. Yeah. He gave the keynote at a convention a few years before and talked about this piano concerto that I'd worked on too. And so I went up to him afterwards and was like, oh my God, it's so hard, but it's so amazing and such a good payoff. And so we just hit it off and had been friends since. And he knew that I was working on the YouTube channel. So he introduced me to Sean. And that night, Sean went back and he looked at my YouTube channel and he came back to me and he said, this. And these are all the things you need to do to be better. Like good content, but you need to work on your thumbnails.
That's amazing.
I find it thumbnail.
Right. Well, that's how I feel like now. I mean, the world of YouTube and influencing is so foreign to me still. And it's amazing. There are all these things that go into it. And that's so cool that you got that early guidance, you know, to like think about things that you might not think like as a musician, like, oh, it only matters that I'm putting out good music.
Well, you know, what's also cool is the fact that she took the guidance, but it actually worked because I, you know, as you watch your channel, you're like, guys, and you keep talking about these milestones you're hitting. And it's just like, you're just smashing it out of the park. You're like, I don't know how I got this many followers. And like literally, I think
it was the thumbnails. It was the thumbnails.
As of today, yeah, it was the thumbnails. As of today, I think you're at almost 400,000 followers. And I'm like,
congratulations.
I'm like, my mom can't make that many fake accounts.
Yeah. Right?
She's pretty smart,
though.
The
crazy thing is, I was doing it for 2 years before I hit a stride. So I think that lots of people think, oh, I'm going to get on YouTube and it's going to be great right away. And the truth is there is a learning curve. Like my early videos, the production quality is awful. The audio is okay, actually, but the video is so terrible. So yeah, it definitely takes some time.
That might be a good kind of jumping off point for that. For someone that is looking to start a YouTube channel, what do you think are like the basic criteria? Obviously, like you said, you saw a gap in knowledge and that was kind of your motivation to get started. What would you give to someone, you know, advice to someone that's thinking like, I have this thing that I don't think anyone else is doing. What would you say to that person?
Well, I think it really depends on what their goal with it is. You know, if a person is looking to make money off of YouTube, there are ways to do that where you're really using ad monetization or something like this. If they're looking to just gain a large following, maybe as a musician, cover songs tend to, you know, work pretty well. So it's when you're thinking about the content, it's, well, what's your purpose with this content? I don't know if anybody should go into YouTube thinking, I'm going to make tons of money.
Right.
It's like
music in general, I think.
Yeah, if you're
like that's the worst motivator. If, like, I'm
that's
just going to start.
That's why I bought a boat.
Yeah.
And a bridge.
Well, let me ask you. So you mentioned having a gap in, you know, there's a gap in knowledge. What was one of your early motivating factors? Like what, like your early content, what were you trying to do at the beginning that maybe changed later on? Like now you're doing a lot of the reaction videos and really bringing in a lot of your knowledge about classical technique and stuff. So when you started out, like what was your original model?
Okay, that's a good question. There's actually a very defining moment where I switched just basically train of thought. And initially I was thinking, what should people know about? You know, what do they need to know to get to be better at composing or just understand and appreciate voice more? And then I was at NAMM, another convention, again with Sean and a bunch of guitar YouTubers. And somebody said, well, you know, what about these reactions? And my husband had mentioned reactions before to me, and I kind of had a bad taste in my mouth. He said, well, why don't you turn it? It's trending. And I kept hearing, it's trending. I'm like, well, I don't know if I really want to be trendy. I want to offer something that is more. Essentially, instead of me saying what people should know about, I need to go ask people what they want to know about. Say, what can I do for you? Not what can not what do I think you need, but what do you want? And then take whatever it is that people are wanting. If they're wanting reaction videos, okay, well, how can I make those reaction videos give a twist to it and make it something that I really value, which is musical appreciation and vocal appreciation? And so the first one I did was a breakdown of a bunch of Fifth Element diva dance singers. And I said, okay, well, this is like how they're doing it. And this is what they did here. And this is why this one's so cool. And this one's so cool in this way. And then it just, that's when it started the ball rolling. So I think like a really big blocker to a lot of people is putting out content that they say, everyone should love this. And instead sort of turning around and saying, what is trending? And how can I make that something that is unique to me?
Well, that's really important. You just nailed it, because the thing that I love about your channel is because you are so insanely passionate about voice and so learned. Like one of the things that I loved was I was watching. So one of the things that made me realize how kindred spirits you are with Siobhan, because I love watching Siobhan. She's been learning a lot of guitar solos on the violin. Cool. And she's always like, oh, wow, I really love cool. how Randy Rhoads did this diminished thing. It's fantastic. And it's like she's discovering stuff I've been listening to since I was like 7. And I kind of feel the same thing with you. But like I was watching the Halloween
I watched episode. It. Yeah, that one was
amazing. And first off, you said like his voice sounded healthy and he was singing like, and I, mm-hmm. I really say like it sounds like Bob Ross, because you're like, he can go anywhere. You could do anything with this voice. You could sing this way. You could, and his volume here is the same as the volume there. But this is where it changed for me. Siobhan and I love owls. There's very few things in this world that I love more than owls. In fact.
This is completely unrelated, Ben.
I even had a crocheted owl made for Siobhan, because I know that of all the things I could possibly get her, this is the best.
But I've seen this character in your videos.
There is one thing that I do love more than owls, and that is red pandas. And you literally...
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just a second.
I know. Like, here we go. This girl's okay. Got me figured out. And the thing is, my favorite photo I've ever taken of all time is not only just a red panda sitting at the zoo, which is sad, but with its tongue sticking out, like it's no. And it's my favorite photo of anything is a red panda with its tongue sticking out at me. And I thought that was literally the best contribution to the world that I've ever achieved. And then I see your video and you're not only talking about the red panda. I was like listening to it and then I look at it. And I'm like, she's dressed as a red panda. Yeah. As she's listening to Halloween. Panda. And I'm like, well, this is why. Because you're the great white buffalo. Because every metal dude ever is like, man, I wish some smart person would talk to me about Halloween and why I like this guy's voice. And I like pandas, but they're not really pandas. But like red pandas, they're cute. They're more like foxes. But then Halloween is great. And he's kind of like Dio. But one thing I want to tell you about Dio. If you sing like Halloween, it's because you're inspired by Dio. And if you say anything otherwise, you're lying. So if you've learned anything, like take that from here.
Got it. No, but to dovetail on that, what I love about what you do, which I relate to on the violin side, is it's very cool to hear you kind of break down the barrier of understanding the virtuosity behind what metal musicians do and what rock musicians do, and just any musicians. Because, you know, coming from like the violin classical world, a lot of people, there's a stigma, right? You look at pop music and it's like, oh, that's easy. Or video game music, oh, that's, you know, you're a sellout, you know, something like that. And I think it's so cool that you're really like breaking it down and like pointing out that these are really amazing things that that these people are doing, like technical things, and translating that to the layperson, you know?
To take a step back in your own musical development, like, you know, going way back, what was your introduction to music in general? And like, you know, how does that, you know, applied to what you do today.
Did you steal Siobhan's question?
I don't think she asked the question.
No,
but I'm saying that's Siobhan, that's Siobhan territory. Isn't that what she's supposed to do?
We're a team. It's a layup.
So the Velociraptor was looking at me as you were talking. Okay.
Point being, I think, you know, for anyone that hasn't checked out your channel, they should do that immediately. But, you know, your insight on the, you know, more extreme types of music is so cool because of, like, Siobhan, it doesn't seem like you had that experience when you were younger. Is that the case?
Yeah, that is the case. My so I would put really my childhood was very, very much classical. My mom was a piano and voice teacher. I was already winning competitions for piano in seventh grade. And it was just like, I was.
Oh, and now you're a pianist that's better than me. I quit, guys. No, because Siobhan literally for like 2 years let me think that I was a great pianist. And she's just a violinist. So together we are violinist and a pianist. Before she sits down at the piano and absolutely murders me. She's like, I'm not really a pianist. And I'm like, then what does that make me? And now not only are you a million times better vocalist, now she's a I'm leaving, guys. I'm over this. I'm over it.
Well, but here's the thing. There's sort of like a little spot kind of in the middle here before I went like much more YouTube and online teaching. I was still doing a lot of teaching in LA while I was working with the AI company, right? And I ended up at a place called 1500 Sound Academy. And there's some big names there. If you think about, you guys might not know him. Pops Dobson, Larry Dobson was there. He was like one of the guys that brought Motown to the LA area at one point. And his son, Rance, he did Boot Up. He was the main producer on that with LMA.
That's a good tune. That's a good tune.
Yeah, right, right.
My fiance used to jam that all day. She's like, I love it. Right.
Yeah. And then I think you had James Fauntleroy there as well. And so there was just a bunch of really big names at this place. And I essentially apprenticed for a while, and I taught some voice lessons on my own there and apprenticed under Pops as well, working in different styles of music, like working in R&B and in pop and learning how to play piano his way, which I have massive respect for. Rance and Pops can't read music. They just go all by ear. They listen to something. They pick out the chords. They do all kinds of fancy things with it. Pops will kill it on the piano. I have nothing on him. If you go to any sort of soul, R&B, Motown, any of those songs, even if you gave me sheet music that I'd studied for years, he would slay it every time better than me. So there's different kinds of piano playing is what I'm trying to say.
Siobhan's better at all of them.
Yeah.
No, but this is why. No, that's why I started to learn jazz, and take some lessons because it is
and jazz now, which is the ultimate form of being an asshole musician is playing jazz.
But it's not to try and be an asshole. It's just to understand because that's one thing that I've learned. That's why I wanted to learn the guitar solos because I'm so impressed by that. Like people that will come up with these amazing licks out of nowhere, you know. And I've spent my whole life reading sheet music. And like when you tell me to compose something, I'm like, okay, well. I'm going to do the classical language, and I wanted to learn. It's just learning the language, you know, a different style of musical approach.
Yeah, exactly.
And just before Ben jumped in the last time, so you were talking about your classical, you know, background from very young age, you know, when you were seven, doing that. And so I guess at any point, were you aware of these other styles and like, what was your view of them? What was like metal, like this, like dirty like thing that you had to stay away from?
Are you projecting, Corey?
Kind of, a little bit. Okay, here's a couple things in here. Yeah. I was doing lots of classical. I also was at church a lot. Mm-hmm. My grandpa, Southern Baptist minister, sang in a barbershop quartet called The Living Waters, and they did revivals kind of going around to different... Anyhow, so really big influence there in a cappella music at an early age. And I was in a trio throughout high school as well, like really very, very much... A cappella, church, had a little bit of country or folk in there too, and classical. My brother listened sometimes to Tool in the car, which is probably why my husband was acceptant of me at some point, because I was like, okay, yeah, but Tool's okay, but I don't know about some of the other things, but he loves Tool. So I have some early seeds planted in some metal, and he listened to a couple other things too. I'm blanking on what it was that he listened to, but he had a few things. I heard Evanescence in high school. I listened to the radio a little bit too, you know, at dances and whatnot. But I would say overall, my ears were mostly rock and metal virgin. So that's easy, why it's so much fun on the channel right now. I'm like, guys, I don't know who Dio is. And then, he's so amazing. Okay.
Well, that brings me to a really important question. So, I really enjoy discovering metal again, because it is like a virgin. It's like, you know, like it's very first time through you. You know, you're like, oh, this Dimebag guy, Cemetery Gates. Is this about like, no, this is like 17 years before that. But like, that's adorable that you would say that. But with like Dio, like, so he's a guy, for example, I always call him the Freddie Mercury of metal. Because
yeah, that's accurate.
Because when I saw Ryan James Dio, he was like 5'5", like little guy. But like, you could hear him 30 rows back, like over the PA system. Like, I'm not even joking. Like literally, you could hear him 30 rows back at Harbor Lights in Boston over the PA system, over Tony Iommi. Like, that's the level of loud that man was, and he was able to project. And the thing is with him, I mean, he was so by the book, like, oh, on this next number and this next number. Like, he had his like whole thing. So like, there was no like real improv other than like, Boston, you've been great tonight and I'm fantastic. And he was so matter. But then when he sang, it was like a door to another world. And I just thought the ability to emote, and here, and the thing was, I'm a guy. So as John Garabedian, the crazy, amazing, super awesome DJ, who's a friend of ours, who's, you know, always says that, you know, women tend to gravitate towards lyrics, whereas men tend to gravitate towards, you know, melodies, like guitar solos and stuff. But I know that with the classical world, like, you know, Siobhan is on the same level, and that and I love watching you because you're like, okay, I tried listening to the lyrics, but I couldn't help but notice this melody is so awesome. And you get so excited, and it's like, yeah, it's Dio. It's Ronnie James. Like, it's like me saying to you, like, the Pope's holy. Like, is that redundant enough for you? Like, yeah. Like, Dio is, he's, but what's it like when you hear all these people? Is there someone that you've gone and said, I now, Dio is the guy I set the bar for all other metal singers? Like, is there someone you've discovered? You're like, this guy just reigns supreme, or this girl reigns supreme for you?
Yeah, well, I think Dio for me has been probably the best metal vocalist. But also understanding, like, after hearing him, that he's been the example for so many. And of course, there are other styles of vocalists where they're doing an amazing job. So I leave room for that. Everybody's got different things that they're doing. But if I were to say, like, oh my gosh, like, this is the metal vocalist that can teach opera singers how to sing, that's Dio. I think that Sohyung, who is very, very, I feel, underappreciated. She's a Korean singer, and she just I did a reaction recently, A Bridge Over Troubled Water. She's able to belt so high, and she just has the most beautiful, like, joyous face all the time. Her goal is to basically spread joy and kindness. It's like, oh my gosh, I love you so much. So she's kind of like a Whitney Houston, essentially, but she's amazing. I don't know why she's not better known. I'm really blown away by her.
I've never heard of her.
She's one of those female vocalists that sets the bar. So if I was to say, you know, Whitney Houston sets the bar, I think that she probably belts higher than Whitney Houston even. It's crazy. Really, really nuts.
I feel like when I've listened, so I'm actually a guy that I don't even get annoyed if I'm waiting in a Bank of America, if someone's playing I Want to Dance with Somebody Who Loves Me on repeat in front of me, I'll listen to it all day because I love Whitney Houston. But
yeah,
one thing I used to always think to myself, because when I grew up, I love Whitney Houston, I love Mariah Carey, because while I was listening to Iron Maiden, I was listening to Hero. But I always thought to myself, now that I've gone back and listened, that Mariah Carey, the ability to go from her head voice to her chest voice to belting things and all, so much more technical, like a Christina Aguilera or Ariana Grande, whereas I feel like Whitney Houston is the girl in church that just owns it and has soul, but like, she's not the same level of technicality as, you know, somebody like an Ariana Grande, who can literally do anything, like acrobatics with her voice.
So I would say, like, Whitney Houston isn't up there using her whistle register, which is that super, super high one, which is what you're referring to. Ariana Grande uses that. Mariah Carey uses that. Morissette Amon is a Filipino singer that uses that and is very, very good as well. I don't think that Sohyung actually uses that either. But for me, like, knowing how to sing and whistle a little bit, I feel like it's a trick. It's like
finger tapping?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, well, it's cool, but give me, like, how much emotion can you impart? When you talk about different registers, I'm wondering how high can one register or another register go? How low can that one go? So it's sort of understanding what the voice is normally able to do. And maybe you had that like trick in your pocket of whistle as well. But when you have the flawlessness of all of that register transition and the beautiful, beautiful emotion and message behind it, like where you can like you can say a single word and it gives you goosebumps. Like, that's amazing.
Have you seen the David Foster documentary?
No. What?
Okay. One of my favorite scenes. He produced the Bodyguard soundtrack, and Kevin Costner had suggested that that they do the first verse a cappella, and he was like viciously against it, and Clive Davis was like, "No, you're gonna do it." And you listen, you don't say no to Clive Davis. And he was like, you know, if you've ever seen him, he throws things. He's angry. He's very has a lot of bravado and machismo as a producer. But when it came out, he said his phone has never rung so many times to tell him how wrong he was, because they're like, that first minute when there's no instrumentation and she's just singing. And you can hear her breathe. And I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it now, because I literally go around on my hoverboard just listening to I Will Always Love You on repeat, because I could never get enough of her voice. It's literally like cocaine for me.
Okay, well, enough That's about fair. You, Ben. Let's go back to Elizabeth. So I want to go back to, since we got a little bit derailed, I'd like to go back to what you were talking about when you first started doing the reaction videos, because I'm curious to hear. You said you were a little bit like not sure about it at the outset, and I want to hear what it was like when you were first starting and how it felt to do that. And did it take you a while to feel like that was your space, like own it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I felt like the first one with the Fifth Element Diva Dance was a little bit of an experiment, but it felt really good to do. It felt really good to essentially take my knowledge and put it with something that was a little bit more resonating with other people. And the Dimash, I got into Dimash Kudaibergen afterwards, who is another amazing, amazing vocalist.
Now, when you're saying resonating, are we talking in 440? Is it 442? Is it with the world and the universe?
Just sympathetic vibrations.
Okay, cool.
With everything.
Is it good vibrations like Mark Wahlberg?
Good vibrations, yes. Not like that store, but like, yeah, like between people. Okay. Anybody who gets that is going to die of laughter. I think that I fell into the groove really quickly, actually, because I want to make sure that I'm true to me and that what I'm doing is providing more value to a person that is watching. I've never really liked reactions where people go ooh and ah and make faces. If I make faces, that's just me. It's not something where I'm trying to put on a face. My face has been nurtured since a very young age, I think, to be way, way expressive, and I get in trouble for it a lot. So having the expressive face was just sort of like there. But adding the knowledge to it and talking about things immediately in this different way, I felt like it added value right away, and it brought people into this universe of like, wow, the voice is really cool. And so it felt like, I would say within a few, that I found a groove there. And I had gotten some good advice from some other YouTubers as well to do them in one takes. So I'll do, in recording them, I do the intro and the outro separately, because sometimes I need to do those a few times where I'm talking about like introducing the song and giving all the background. Of course, I'll make a lot of mistakes in there. So sometimes I'll have 20 intros. Sometimes I'll have two, but we'll pick the best one. And then we do the actual reaction to the song itself in just one first time straight through. I will confess there have been less times than fingers on one hand when I've had to go back and do something, usually because partway through a technical error came up. Like, oh no, my mic stopped working. Things like that.
We're very familiar with technical errors on the show.
Yeah, right?
I'm sorry, but I can't hear you. What did you say? Yeah. My internet's cutting. Are you guys there?
Awful. I think that challenging myself to do that all the way through without, you know, pre-watching a video and getting to that right away was very important. And it made it so that I could be authentic and become comfortable with it right away.
Hold on, can we slow that down? So are you suggesting to the people that may be listening and or watching that if you want, or one of the keys to being successful is being able to do things first off the cuff, so having the ability to improv and do things in a take, not only for editing purposes, but also for the passion and to be authentic? Because I completely agree that not only do you not want to sit there and just cut yourself up a million times, that seems so much more contrived in your head. I mean, I usually just say something offensive, so Corey just has to do it, or he cuts to somebody else. But with you, I love that, because it does seem so genuine that at times I almost question it, but like, you literally sometimes just stop it, and I get so excited too, because the people that you have, so many people writing into you that the masses are smart enough to know that you should be talking about someone like Devin Townsend, and you even interviewed the guy. And like, for me, like, to have a classical trained vocalist talking to a guy like Devin Townsend, and I guess demystifying a voice to me, that like, if there's any trick or treat, if you will, in vocals, like a guy that I guess I don't understand what the flippity hell he's doing half the time. And his ability to go from such a operatic voice to such a great pop voice to like this demonic metal, but yet somehow he's hitting notes like in this crazy voice. And you like, again, demystify that in the same way I say it was tantamount to watching Chopped, where they're like, this is umami. It has a fish flavor, but yet it's very whole. Like, can you speak to that? Like, how did you develop that ability to take that knowledge and then extrapolate it for people in a digestible way?
Oh, that's a good question. I think there's a few things that contributed to that, but it isn't something that I very intentionally worked on. I have been teaching for a long time. You know, I started teaching dance when I was 13.
So of course you did.
Swing dancing. It was fun.
Tell me more how you and Siobhan are more talented than Corey and I all the time. Like, what else do you, how many languages do you know, Elizabeth?
Oh, like, know or have sung in.
Oh, Jesus.
Sorry. It's a legit question.
Okay, no. I'm going to say no, because you know, you could sing in languages and learn it phonetically. Mm-hmm. So forget that. How many languages do you know, Elizabeth?
That I know that I could have conversations in would be English, German, French, Italian. So just the four there.
Or just the four.
She wins.
I can't even speak in English properly. Like, what? I don't even know how to use an ellipsis. I didn't know what, I thought that was a phase of the moon until like a week ago.
But it's a thing you have to study. Like, it's part of opera singer training, because we sing in so many languages.
Sure.
And it's funny, when you first go to a school that's really into opera, you don't go to your Italian class first. You go to your English class first, and you learn how to properly pronounce English words while you're singing opera. That's a thing. So I know it's very strange, but
and then everything on the paper is in Latin.
Oh, well, some things aren't. Yeah.
You all at the end, and she's gonna get into it and tell me like, no, that's not all Latin. See, I love giving people false news, and then like someone has to explain like
you also
why it's
like
so
interrupting
wrong.
Your own. Answer to your own question.
Yeah, I don't even know what your original question was.
Haven't you watched the show, Corey?
I try not to if I don't have to.
No, but I think to reiterate what you were asking and what I think you want to know is, you know, how did you figure out how to do something off the cuff without, because I find that it's really hard to do something off the cuff without being too wordy, you know, or having a bunch of extra garbage that you don't have to cut out. And I think that it's very hard to know as you're going, just like your first run through, like exactly what you need to say. And did it take you a while to get into that pattern of sort of having a format for how you do your reactions? Or is it just kind of organic each time?
So I think that I grew up in a family that was also of teachers. My mom and dad was teaching middle school. So both teachers, I understood a little bit about teaching already at that point. And I feel like a lot of times in the video, it's just taking moments from the singers to teach about what they're doing, or from the music to teach about what's happening there. And I think that I developed that as well, just from teaching individual students a bunch or classes. But then another thing that's interesting is when you do, I don't, I'm sure it's the same for violin, actually. You must have master classes where you
have
somebody play like within your
Siobhan's
studio.
Yeah, Siobhan's the one teaching it. She's a master.
No. Well, it's sometimes, but no, but exactly. Yeah, where a bunch of people come with prepared pieces and there's somebody that hears you play.
Yeah, so, and critiques you. Exactly. Yeah. And it's like a sort of like a group class, essentially. And I have been to so many of those. That was just, I have had at least a decade of regular master classes, you know, we're talking when you're in college, it's at least weekly. So yeah. I think hearing people and critiquing it in that situation and hearing the master critique it and eventually getting to the position where I get to critique my group of students, having that preparation, it's very easy to go and listen to a song and really listen to the voice and say, oh, I hear this, this, and this, and this. And then in my head say, okay, now who am I talking to? Do I want to use this kind of language or this kind of language to relate that idea?
Yeah.
Well, that's why I feel like you're like Bob Ross, because when I watch him all, listen, I love him. There's nobody in this world that I think is just a, like Mr. Rogers and Bob Ross are just like, if everyone could be those people, and I don't mean male or female, I mean just like the spirit of those people, and their creativity and the love that they spread through teaching. But Bob Ross, mm-hmm. You know, so that you know, like, was a drill sergeant, and then when he got back from war, he said, I don't want to yell at people anymore, I just want to help animals. And all the money he ever made from teaching, from doing all the paint, literally went to animals. But what he did was the whole time was tell you about how you could make your own world and tell people to be creative and to give people like that push into like, you can do this too. If you make a Z, you can also make a tree. You know, like, and with you, I feel like you've taken things that so many times I would walk away and go, Bruce Dickinson, forget it, dude. And you're like, no, it's really cool what he does, but like, listen to it and blah, 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 blah. And you slow me down. You take my BPM of my heart and you bring it down at least 15, and you just slow me down and you tell me that metal's gonna make it all right. And I've been knowing that all of my life, that metal was gonna make it all right, but hearing you say it makes me believe it.
That was probably the greatest paragraph of compliment I've had.
He's one for the paragraphs for sure.
And we appreciate you taking his energy down any level. It makes him much more tolerable.
We're not able to do it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Corey.
No, well, I'm just trying to see if I can find back to where there was some sort of actual content we were discussing.
Semblance of meaning.
So
I was curious to ask. Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Corey. You have a question.
Siobhan, you're probably got a more intelligent thing that you're going to say.
So. No. But so you mentioned that you got some guidance from other YouTubers. I'm curious, at what point did you start getting feedback from the people watching you, like your followers? And was it helpful feedback? Did that help kind of push you in a certain direction in some ways of what to include in your videos or what people are looking for?
Yeah. So pretty early on when we started to see that growth, immediately I started tracking what people were recommending. And this is something that very much sets our channel apart. We literally go through all of the comments. We don't necessarily do it on the older videos. We'll do it on the more recent ones. What we usually do is like about 3 days to a week afterwards, we go through and we look at all of the comments, all of the song recommendations. I actually have an assistant that does this for me now because it takes so much time.
Hold on. I think we should hijack your show and tell people that what we want to see you talk about, and then make everybody like secretly like penetrate your comments so that like we're leaving little cryptic messages.
Yeah, we're gonna get all seven of our viewers to go and
my mom. My mom's at least four more people because she's a Jewish angry lady.
She will
definitely fire behind that keyboard all day long, please. And she's a singer in a barbershop quartet. Cool.
Yes. So please continue on your tracking the comments.
So with Dimash, which is the one I started on right after Fifth Element, we were going through, this is just me at this point, and I went through and I looked at every single comment and I put it in a spreadsheet and said, like, how many times, I even did like little tickers.
That's such
and
a Siobhan
thing.
My
sister helped me with this at one point. How many times has this song by this artist been recommended? What video did they recommend? Like, what version of it? And I showed them that spreadsheet of the list and how many times it'd been recommended. And I think that really caught the attention of the community of, wait a second, she's listening. And right around that same time, we also, this was really helpful from my husband, from Kirk, who is now the COO of the Charismatic Voice. He works full time with me now trying to build community.
How
cool
is that?
So my goal isn't just to, right? I know. It's so cool. We talked early on about what we wanted to do with the channel. And that kind of comes back to the, what's your purpose here? Our purpose isn't to make money. It is good to make money so that we can expand our reach, so that we can employ people, because I think that that's a really good thing in today's world, especially. Yeah. But the goal is to increase music and vocal appreciation and build a community of people that just love music and just love voice. And that, to me, is not just releasing videos. It's about communicating with the people that are watching. It's about having things like a Patreon is, like, I would say, the core group of our community who catch things that I can't and that Paolo can't, that Kirk can't. They'll catch them and they'll help direct people to the right place, or say, like, oh yeah, this thing here at this place. We've just got a great group of people now, and I want to see that grow in particular. People who love music. Yes.
That's amazing.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is something we've heard a lot, where having a clear vision of your purpose or your brand really makes a huge difference in the trajectory, you know, and how you do everything every single day, you know? So I think that's so important for people to know, like, what is my, like, my sentence mission, you know, like, what do I want yes. to do?
But the thing is, that's so important. It's your energy transfers. So again, back to Bob Ross, quiet. The quiet energy. He's so important with those little trees. Brown ochre. Did you know that color before he told you about it? I didn't know about brown ochre. But every time I see a brown, I go, is that brown ochre? Because it's been operantly conditioned into my mind. And I think that you have a quiet power with your voice. And it's because of the passion that you're speaking through. Because you want, like our friend Ollie, who plays on Lost Symphony, he always wanted to teach people. And it's so clear in your videos that you just love teaching things to people. And the excitement that you have is real. So the reason people, I think, it's so clear to me why they responded and why I responded, is because I'm like, if this is not real, then she's really good at faking it.
It's very real. I really, really love music, and I really love voice. It's, like, been my life to get to understand it and share it more.
I'm curious to ask, just because this is such a different world to me, what is a day like in your life? You know, like, how many hours are you spending on content creation? Or, like, I'm curious, for someone of your scale, you know, with your number of followers, what are you doing on a daily basis? Like, what are your days like?
Yeah, well, it has been shifting a lot. So it's hard to say patterns. And that's partly because we brought Kirk in to work full time with us in November. And until then, I was doing all of the video editing myself. So now most of the video editing is in his hands, which is such a relief. That was taking so much time. And let's see, he also takes head on the Discord channel or Patreon, and, like, really trying to get events going there, and then I'll come to them rather than needing to organize them as much. So he's taken over essentially half of my job right now. So anybody that's starting out, just take that with a grain of salt, because know that community management and editing videos takes a ton of time. So
Corey knows.
Corey's like, tell me more.
Yeah,
is Corey's that kind like, of right now is editing work? Ben and me.
No.
Right? Corey, so you know, if you have time to do anything else, we haven't given you enough.
You know what? It's
as
funny,
he
though,
because I drink of whiskey.
I feel bad for Corey. I do this to my husband, though, too, which is funny that you say that, because I'll, like, make violin videos, but I hate video editing and I'm so slow at it. So I totally appreciate how long it takes. And I, like, once he was like, oh, no, you're doing it wrong, I'm like, that's great. Why don't you just take that job? Because I definitely don't want it. I just want to play. I don't want to edit the video. Yeah, it really is time consuming. So I totally appreciate.
Yeah. So I'd say my days, there's some that are always broken into emails or responding to messages or comments. So there's always going to be a decent chunk of time to do that. I teach one-on-one lessons. I still have my regular studio of students that I teach. that's been getting smaller because I just don't have enough time. So I've been trying to actually size down on me.
You're laughing because it's true, but that's an what a high class problem, right?
It's a good problem to have. I have an online course. It's a demystifying singing. There we go. Yeah. But I know, right? Demystifying.
I mystify the whole room with all the smoke that comes out of my head, and you demystify it. You're like the ionizer to everything that I do.
I love it. The ionizer.
You're the ionizer.
I have it's an intensive singing course, and I usually have a couple of groups going through that at the same time. And they have lessons as well, and group sessions and recordings that I give them feedback on. So we have that going. I record a lot of videos every week. So that my main recording day is Sundays. Usually I have group sessions for the course on Sunday mornings, and then Sunday afternoons into the evenings, I just try to knock out a bunch of reactions, as many as I can do. I would say the average that I can get recorded on a Sunday is 4, but I'm like, I'm wasted afterwards because it's very intense listening. Mm-hmm. And so I'll get that recorded.
You're listening to like Hailstorm and like Nightwish and Halloween. So like I can only imagine
that.
I'm sure you're better off now at this point, but like in like that small apartment complex and someone's walking by and they normally hear you going me, and now they're hearing like rainbow in the dark.
No, but I think it's the analytical listening, and I understand because I had to do an exercise today for my Berkeley class where it's like, oh, pick a song and listen to the mix, like where is everything in the stereo field and like what are the effects, and I picked a Taylor Swift song and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like listening and jamming out to this. No, but
basic.
Basic. But it's fun to listen to. And then when you have to listen critically, you're like, oh my God, I'm exhausted after listening to this. Like trying to identify these things, you know, to explain it to somebody else. It's hard.
And she has really good production.
Yeah, so that mix by like Serban Ghania, I think.
I didn't know.
One of the best mix engineers out there, I'm pretty sure.
Well, yeah, and then you also have Max Martin, who's literally like my hero in life. Like if I could be anybody in the music industry, like he is the Backstreet Boys, he is TLC, he is like he's all those songs, except he's a Swedish guy with like looks like he's in a metal band. You know what I mean? And the fact that he wrote all those tunes, like it's amazing. And of course they're like, oh yeah, why is Taylor Swift sound awesome? Because she's working with the best mastering person. Like if you look it on a histogram, it's like perfect.
That's red
label perfect.
Whatever.
And everything that she does, of course it sounds
great. Did you check the odometer on that mix too, Ben?
I did check the odometer. And the barometer on the hydrometer is at 50%. So now we're flying at a great altitude.
Back to your schedule there of a full day of recording on Sundays.
Anyway, I understand that you would be exhausted after intensely listening to. Yeah, it's a lot for your brain.
It's a lot, yeah. So I like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that tends to be really heavy private lesson teaching days for me. And I fit in meetings where I can. During the week, I block out an hour each day. I call it my sacred hour. That is when I get to practice. So I will go to my piano and practice singing play and sing a song. I might also practice beatboxing because I am taking lessons in beatboxing. That's right.
I love this.
All right.
Right? It's so fun. It's so fun. And I also work with a speech pathologist who sometimes coaches opera singers. So I work with her as well, just on my own voice technique. So I think it's really important to keep doing that. And on the Thursdays and Fridays, I try to schedule lighter days because I might do extra video recordings. We have a lot of patron events. So Wednesday and Friday, I always have live chats with patrons as well. And we try to do, there's Beat Saber recordings that we do because, again, video game nerd. And playing and slashing blocks to awesome music is like one of the best ways I can enjoy a song. So we have Beat Saber recordings that we do sometimes. There's basically lots of extra recordings that we need to do. Sometimes it's just me recording for an all vocal project that I'm working on, or maybe recording something singing for a video game somewhere that'll come out in 5 years if it does. Right? So it's a lot of different things. I try to take Saturdays off. Sometimes on Saturday mornings, we play Dungeons and Dragons, though, on Twitch as part of our Patreon as well.
Are you the dungeon master?
No, that's my husband.
Are you the gatekeeper?
But, oh my goodness. No, I am.
I'm the keymaster.
Are you actually a keymaster in a Dungeons and Dragons game?
No, that's a Ghostbusters reference.
Amazing. Yeah, I was a Ghostbusters.
I was trying to out geek you.
You're trying to. Oh, okay.
By the way, I do have a D32. I was rolling it and to see if I should outgeek you, and it said yes.
A D32?
And you failed.
It's not a real. It's not a real die. See, again, that, it's like I want that note.
On that note,
you've been 2020.
We're coming to the end of our first hour with Elizabeth.
This is the end, my only friend. The end.
We don't need to hear that.
I'm learning a ton here. This is fascinating. I definitely want, if anyone has not yet checked out Elizabeth's channel, The Charismatic Voice on YouTube, thecharismaticvoice.com, is that right, for your website?
Yeah.
Which has those courses that you were talking about, which I think that we should probably take.
Master courses.
So I can actually learn more stuff.
we should all take them, yeah.
And anything else that you would like to plug away at the moment?
Oh, well, if you want to be part of Patreon, it's just that I told you that's where the community hub is. Mm-hmm. So you can find me, Charismatic Voice, on Patreon. We sometimes play video games with our patrons and slay them in Among Us as well. So if you're into that, or if you just want to talk about music and about how much you love a vocalist, that's the community for you. So it's cool. You can find us there.
Very cool. We'll put links in the description of this video.
Like Zelda?
Yeah, we can talk about Zelda music.
Well, you said links.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh, that links.
Like a link to the past.
Don't you always do and extend the end of our episode. We're like, okay, we're done. Bye. And then he goes on his 20-minute rant. So we're going to just cut it there.
You've been 2020. But stick around for later this week. We're going to have, hopefully Elizabeth will stick around with us because she might decide she hates us because the reaction has not necessarily been great.
What?
It's been wonderful. It's been wonderful. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you for affirming that the reaction actually was wonderful. It made me feel way better.
2020-D.com. We'll see you next time. Thank you, as always, for checking out this episode of 2020. As mentioned, visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is from episode number 70, featuring Burton Roberts, TV producer and former Survivor contestant. Check it out.
When you're spending your own money, you're super conscious about where every dollar goes. How can you do things absolutely the most efficient way? And so we started from the bottom up. So our budget is zero. We're going to put a little bit of money in as we need it and keep working up. And so that's how we've always looked at budgets. You take someone who starts at the top, all they know how to do is spend a lot of money because they get a lot of money. And so they start spending all this. And so a lot of times what really helped us is we'd go into pitches, or we'd be talking to Travel Channel, Lonely Planet, a lot of these different companies we end up working with. And when it came to budget, we'd always try to get a sense of what they had, obviously from a negotiating standpoint. And whatever they throw out, it looked like it's not very much, And then we walk out dude, that's so much money.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.